So, first off, I can't take credit for this lesson. Although I changed a lot of it and added things to it, the first time I heard this lesson was in Crosby. They do a ladies' class over there, and we went and we heard it, and they say that some of the best lessons to teach are the ones that bother you. And I guess the first time I heard this lesson, like, it kind of hit me a little bit. I'm like, oh, I'm guilty of quite a few of these things. These are things I need to work on. So that is why I decided to do this one. And I'm hoping this is two lessons worth of material, and hopefully we get through half of it and we do the other half next week, because I don't have anything else prepared. But let's start by looking at a few verses out of Proverbs. We'll start with Proverbs 2:16 through 19. Miss Bobby, would you want to read that for us?
Deliver you from the strange woman, from the adulteress who flatters with her words, that leaves the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her heart. For her house sinks down to death, and her tracks lead to the dead. None who go to her return again, nor do they reach the paths of life. So you look, was that always
19? That was it.
Okay.
And what can we take away from this passage?
Better stay away from her.
It shows us the things we should avoid, right?
Yes.
Let's flip over to 5. This is a long one. 1 through 23. Miss Susan, did you have a lesson?
Yes.
Okay. Miss Frieda, would you want to read that for us?
Which one, I'm sorry?
Proverbs 5:1-23.
Talk about the sea all of it. I forgot my glasses.
Oh.
So that's okay. 5:1-23.
23.
Oh, the whole chapter. Okay.
Yeah.
My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion, and your lips may keep. Your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable. You do not know them. Therefore, hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. Lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of a foreigner, and you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed, and say, how have I hated instruction, and my heart despised correction? I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. Drink water from your own cistern, and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be only your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of your youth, as a loving dear and a graceful dove. Let her breath satisfy you at all times, and always be encouraged in rapture with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of seductress? For the ways of the man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. His own iniquity is entrapped the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he shall go astray.
So So what can we summarize this chapter in a few sentences?
Avoid the immoral woman. I think it says somewhere that it was that in this or the first reading that it's hard to come back once you go down that path.
Warns against destruction, and what you say is kind of lack of knowledge. If you ever start down that path, you won't probably turn back to the righteous way.
Right, and I also I put down contentment towards the end of the chapter. It talks about being satisfied by the one that you're with and being, true with her, like being content with what you have and not always looking for the next bigger, better thing that's out there. Because if we do that or we compare to anyone else, we're never going to be happy with what we have, right? Let's turn over and look at chapter 6. Verses 20 through 35. Miss Sally, you want to read that for us?
My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is the light. And reproofs of instruction are the way of life, to keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of the strange woman. Last not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire in his bosom, and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals, and his feet not be burned? So he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her, shall not be innocent. Men do not despise a thief if he steal to satisfy his soul when he is hungry. But if he be found, he shall restore sevenfold. He shall give all the substance of his house. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. For jealousy is the rage of a man, therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not regret any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts.
So again, this one is warning of adultery, things that we should be avoiding. Anything else that y'all got from that?
It talked about the commands and the commandments is a lamp and the law is a light. So in the beginning it talked about, if you continue obeying the commands of God and their fathers, that should help them to stay away from the adulterous woman.
Yes, right. So we know who wrote Proverbs, right? Well, we think we know. And who was that?
Solomon.
And as I'm reading a lot of these, I feel like almost like a parent talking to a child. We're all in different life stages here, and it might be easier for me to see that, I guess, because I could see my mom telling me, that you should be doing this, this, and this. You know you're not supposed to go do that. But do we always take our parents' advice? Sometimes do we have to learn the hard way? And I feel every one that we're reading, I'm like, I could see a parent saying this to their child as a warning, trying to protect them. Like, I did this, and it didn't work out for me. And sometimes instead of going, yeah, okay, I shouldn't do that, We're like, but it might turn out different if I do it. It might be different. Instead of heeding a lot of these warnings in here. We have two more. Chapter 7, 6 through 27. Miss Susan, you want to read that?
6 through 27?
Yes.
For at the window of my house I looked through my glass and saw among the simple I perceived among the youths a young man devoid of understanding passing along the street near her corner. And he took the path to her house in the twilight in the evening, in the black and dark night. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face. And I have found you, and I have spread my bed with tapestry. Colored covering of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. For my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home on the appointed day. With an enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till an arrow struck his liver and the bird hastens to the snare. He did not know it would cost his life. Now therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death.
Okay, so here we have a pretty good description of a person. A harlot. I think the ESV uses the word prostitute. It gives us an idea of how she would act and that a life of immorality leads to death. But I also think that with the few passages in here, 25 and 26, it also made me think of beyond this, we need to be aware that our actions can lead other people with us. Not just as a harlot, but in everyday life. There are things that we can do or attitudes that we can have that can affect other people and bring them down with us. Misery loves company is kind of what it made me think of. Because our actions have reactions and can affect others, and we need to be more thoughtful of that. I know sometimes I'm not, and I'm in a bad mood, and I want someone else to be in a bad mood with me and feel the same way I do, to commiserate with, and that's not the right attitude to have. It's something that I've been working on, but I also notice that when other people are upset about something, I tend to feel how they're feeling, or it puts me in a bad mood, and we need to be aware of those actions as well. That's what I got from the end of the passage. Did anybody get anything else that I missed? Does anyone disagree with what I said?
Well, I think he was so influenced by her, what she projected to be, and she wasn't.
Yes, she really went out of her way to go to him.
Yes.
And the last one we're going to look at right now is chapter 9, 13 through 18. Ms. Warren.
A foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knows nothing, for she sits at the door of her house on a seat by the highest places of the city to call to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here, and as for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant, but he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of hell.
Okay, and this will get us into really where we're going to start. That gives us a description of folly, right?
What, could I make a comment?
Yes.
I know we're not men, we're not studying about men, but it's striking to me how this describes the men that are, the kind of man that's taken in by this, and how women seem to know that. You know, they need to seem to be able to, the woman of folly seems to be able to know how to zero in on the weakest man.
Yes. And we can pinpoint weaknesses.
Right. And he doesn't, they all say, he doesn't know that it leads to death, down the path of death. Mm-hmm. So.
I thought it made me think of the same thing in the previous passage where we talked about a bird in a snare and not knowing that the repercussions of what was going to happen. It makes me think of the same thing, that you can be so unaware until the very last second.
You're the only one here with a husband, but this is I think a pretty strong statement to wives to make sure, you know, that you're doing what you need to do to make sure your husband's happy at home. I mean,
right.
Sometimes you can't fix it. Sometimes they're going to do what they're going to do no matter what you do, but I think it's a good piece of advice.
Yes, because if you're doing what you should and your husband's heart's in the right place,
right,
then there shouldn't be an issue.
Right.
We can control ourselves. Yes.
I mean, that's where communication comes in. You know, husbands and wives, I think, sometimes just fail to communicate. And if you don't know what's going on in the mind of that other person, how can you know, just be at a loss and how to help them, or help
yes.
their marriage, you know. So I think it's key communication.
I can be upset over something and my husband's like, what's wrong? And I just kind of look at him like, well, you should know. No, no, he shouldn't. He can't read my mind, even though I wish he could sometimes. But yeah, a simple example just is that. My mom always told me never to argue over a coffee pot. It was, the coffee pot broke. And my stepfather thought he was doing a nice thing by going and buying my mom a new coffee pot. It wasn't the coffee pot she wanted. And I'm like, well, why don't you just tell him, you know, you can take it back. And she goes, Joanne, don't argue over a coffee pot. She's like, that's a small thing. It's fine. I'll get used to it. It's okay. You know, if you're starting to argue about the little things and you're not talking about the little things, which should he have asked her about the coffee pot? Yes, but... if you start to argue about the little things, then that just leads up to more and more and nitpick and stuff like that. So there are times when I get upset, I'm like, is this a coffee pot? Are those socks on the floor really a big deal?
Pick your mom.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. The first thing I asked y'all to do was to define folly. Does anyone have a definition for that?
I do.
Okay.
Lack of good, sane, or normal prudence and foresight.
Okay.
I have the trait of acting stupidly or rashly, senseless behavior.
Okay.
I have a definition that says to hold to the pursuit of truth, if I can read that, in content by choosing to make your own goal, your own path. In other words, talking to someone in a way that they can convince them that they are. But also, I've got foolishness and waste of time.
Okay, I have most of those. I had a foolish act, idea, or practice.
Mm-hmm.
Folly isn't a word we use a lot in today's vernacular. But if Folly was a woman. How would we describe her as a woman?
Silly.
I put that she's idle, slack in her duties for her husband, home, and family, easily distracted. She prefers just to take life as it comes and have a little fun along the way. She's content in ignorance. She lacks both the desire and self-control to discipline her activities. The long-term effects of her daily habits are never considered. Her name, derived from an adjective translated as foolish or slack, is used only this one time in the scriptures, meaning foolishness. Folly is a lack of good sense because of the depth of foolishness can be exceedingly destructive. Now, I can't take credit for that. the lady who did the lesson, that was hers. But that was the first time I sat and I'm like, oh, that hits home a little bit. That hurts a little bit. Am I always the most self-disciplined in activities? I am very blessed to be able to be a stay-at-home dog mom, animal mom, a homemaker. And so there are things that I do every day, but since I don't go away to work and I don't have someone that I report to, can I be slack in things? Yeah. Oh, I'll do the laundry tomorrow. I'll run the sweeper tomorrow. I want to do this instead. And I realized I really needed to work on that. That was something that I needed to work on because my husband's never going to come home and be like, oh, you didn't run the sweeper? Isn't that your job? He's never going to say that, but I also don't want him to come home and feel like I was at work all day and what did she do? You know, we have anybody that, you know, got to stay home and raise their kids. A lot of people don't see that as a full-time job, which I've babysat plenty enough. By the time they're ready to go home, I'm ready to take a nap. They don't see that as a full-time job. They're like, oh, well, what do you do all day? Well, there's plenty to do around the house. Do we always do it? Do we find a reason not to do it? Sometimes. But is that, and I don't want to say that's wrong, because there are times I'm like, I need a day. But when it becomes a habit that we do to constantly push things off, that is where I think folly comes more into play. Yes.
I wanted to comment on one of the things you said in your description was a lack of good sense.
Yes.
A lot of times that made me think of a lack of common sense. And sometimes people, women, who don't have any common sense, they don't even know how to make a decision. They don't know how to organize their day. They don't know how to make, you know, they don't even know how to get their kids together, you know, to get out of the house. Because I don't know if they're just easily distracted or I mean, I see people like that, but I don't really understand how they're like that or why they're like that. And I don't even know if that's something that's fixable. I don't know if that's a mental thing or, you know, an inborn thing, or if it's something that you can change with effort. But it'll really hurt you in the long run if you can't have enough sense to make the decisions where the people around you at least are concerned, well, even where yourself is concerned.
Right. And that comes back into influencing others. You know, if that is how your children grow up, they see, like, chaos, for lack of a better term, then they're going to tend to lean maybe towards that or completely to the other extreme and be overly rigid, I guess. There are times we're all scatterbrained and we don't do that, but also we have to make decisions, right? Our husband is the head of the household for some of us, but we do have to make decisions when he's not around. You know, he's not gonna give you a list of things or always tell you. It makes me think of the, where do you want to go eat? I'm that person that's always like, I don't care, wherever. Well, that's not a name of something. Where do you want? And we go back and forth like this. It one of us just needs to make a decision, right? It makes me think of that. I don't, the big decisions are the ones that I'm like, running the sweeper, or, you know, what I'm going to do with my day, how, what time I'm going to do whatever. That's not a big decision to me. It's bigger decisions. Like, oh, should we spend the money on getting a new vehicle or something like that? Those are the big decisions that communication comes into play, back and forth. But we are responsible for some of those decisions, especially when it comes to in the household. What else do I have? We have some descriptions of folly in the Bible. And some of these, depending on the version y'all have, might be different. I know of two of them specifically.
What version are you using?
I have the ASV with me, or the NASV with me. But I looked at the ESV because I liked the word it used better in one of these. And then one of them, the very last one, about being imputed, came from the New King James. As far as I know, it was a different word in the New American Standard, in the ESV. I did not check the King James Version. But the first one we'll start with is Proverbs 9:13. The woman of folly is boisterous. She is naive and knows nothing. What can we use to define boisterous?
Turbulent.
That's a good one.
My version says clamorous, which to me is noisy. I guess that's the same as boisterous, loud.
I have noisy, loud, and clamorous. Yeah. What version are you using?
New King James.
New King James, okay. Clamorous was one. I think at the end, in the questions, I ask you to define clamorous as well. Does anyone have any other descriptions, definitions?
I've got rowdy.
Rowdy?
Oh, noisy, full of energy.
Noisy and full of energy. Yes.
I have unruly, noisy, and lacking in restraint or discipline.
I have unrestrained. Okay. So we're all on the same page there. Mm-hmm. Is this a good trait to have?
I don't think so.
I did look at a few definitions that it said high-spirited or something.
I think there are maybe situations where it's okay. Like if you're at an amusement park riding a ride or something. But if it's an everyday occurrence that, you know, the kind that goes on and on and grates on people's nerves, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
don't
sometimes know. You just sit here and think, oh, no, here we go.
In this verse, I don't think it should be taken as a good thing, but I don't always think it's bad. You know, I think of amusement parks, stuff like that, the people screaming on rides. That's not a bad thing. But in this sense, I don't think it was meant as anything good. And in chapter 7:10, and behold, a woman comes to meet him, dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart. That's the New American Standard. In the ESV, it says dressed as a prostitute. Does the New American, or the New King James, say anything different?
Yeah, it's hard to look.
Okay. I thought I looked at, after a few of these, I looked at that one and it was the same. What can we define immodest as?
Indecent.
I have lacking humility.
Not conforming to the sexual mores of a particular time or place.
Very good. Normally when we think of immodest, we think of how people dress, right? And again, we're not studying about men, but can men be dressed immodestly?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They can too. I've noticed an increasing trend with the high school age boys in the short shorts. When I was in school, the boys were wearing gym shorts past their knees. That was the thing. But I have noticed that that is an increasing trend. And I think when we think of dressing immodestly, we normally think of a woman or a girl dressed in something too tight, too short, too low cut. But men can be...
I think it also includes, especially in this verse, something designed to entice.
Yes.
You know, or stir up lust or whatever.
Yes. And I think we can say, well, I'm comfortable in this. I don't want people to look at me. I don't. But if you bend over and your shorts are so short, then people are going to. And
the grocery store.
Yeah, there are people that wear shorts so short that...
Yes. They show more than if they were wearing a bathing suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When it starts to warm up like a couple of days ago, you know.
Yes. Or when it's cooler and you wear the long sweatshirts and it looks like you don't have any shorts on underneath. We think of things like that, and the argument people make are, well, that's how I want to dress. I don't care if people look at me. But we're also not supposed to knowingly do things that are going to make someone else stumble, right? And if I'm wearing something that I shouldn't be, that's too tight, too, and someone else stumbles because of me, well, I feel like it's on me as well. It's not just them. I played a part in that, too. Whether I knowingly did it, I guess. And we're all going to have different opinions on how short is too short when it comes to shorts. I teach an art class on Fridays for homeschool kids, and you'd be surprised how some of them come dressed. I'm like, okay. We had an issue with one of the teenagers wearing crop tops, and we got a whole midsection out, and I'm like, sorry, there is a dress code. You're not supposed to do that. And it was brought to my attention, well, her parents have to drop her off, so they have to know what she's wearing. And I'm like, yeah, my mom would have chased me back into my bedroom if they need change, or she wouldn't have bought it for me in the first place. But it's just, it's surprising. Even with the kids that I teach, they are all homeschooled. They're all of some sort of faith background. And that's where you notice different differences in what's okay and what's not okay for them. And they're seeing that.
Joanne, just because of what we just talked about, this next verse says she was loud and rebellious and her feet wouldn't stay at home. That goes along with the boisterous thing where, you know, they're always out looking for entertainment.
Yes.
That want to be, you know, have fun. Always want to have fun.
Yes. And we can go out, we can have fun doing simple things. Most people, younger people, still my age, I guess, still want to go out on the weekend. They want to live in downtown because they can walk to the bars, they can walk to all of this. I'm sorry, that doesn't sound like fun to me. I'd much rather be at home, relaxed. Not saying that going out and, you know, having fun is bad, but the type of fun we're looking for. Is it going to an escape room with some of your friends, or is it going out to a bar downtown, or going to a concert of that maybe it's the music we shouldn't be listening to? The flattering tongue of a seductress in chapter 6:24. To keep you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. Seductress came from New King James, I believe. Am I right, Lauren?
Yes.
Okay. Does anyone have a definition for flattery?
The actual practice of flattery.
I had excessive or insincere praise. Flattery can be sincere, but according, you know, according to with this verse.
Yes.
That's not what she was trying to do. That was going to be, she was going in the other direction as far as insincere praise.
Right.
Anything, what she was saying was anything to entice the man.
Yes, context, right? It gives us that. I have excessive and insincere praise given especially to further one's own interests. And I also have that it said a smooth talker. Hear the smooth words of the adulteress tells a man what he wants to hear. I also have down here Psalms 12. 2 and 3. They speak falsehood to one another. With flattering lips and with a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that speaks great things. So this is talking about smooth words of treacherous people. Right? So it can still be flattery and be wrong, even if it's not like we're hearing, like we're talking about here in Proverbs, with the seductress. The other one I have is Isaiah 30, verses 9 and 10.
That verse before the number says it has double hearts they speak. So it says with flattering lips and a double heart they speak. So I'm not sure. The double heart doesn't seem right.
I would think that would go fall into the furthering one's own interests. You're saying one thing, but really, you're doing it for another reason.
Yeah.
And in 39 and 10, sorry, yeah. For this is a rebellious people, false sons, sons who refuse to listen to the instruction of the Lord, who say to the seers, you must not see visions, and to the prophets, you must not prophesy to us what is right. Speak to us pleasant words. Prophesy illusions. So, they're telling, them not to, they want pleasant things spoken to them. They don't want the truth spoken to them here. They want, these people want to be flattered as opposed to doing the flattery. Right? Does that make sense? Flattery is something that there's quite a few verses about it. I stuck with these two, and maybe these two weren't the best, but I think of Saul and the people around him that told him what he wanted to hear instead of what he needed to hear. And it makes me think of yes men. It's always nice to have a yes man around you, like, oh, does this outfit look nice? Oh, yeah, it looks great. But does it really? or, you know, oh, well, I'm just going to go out to this bar with my friends, and I'm just going to sit here. I'm not going to drink or anything. And people telling me that's a good idea. Whereas I really should be having someone telling me the truth about those things. Right? We're not talking about someone saying, oh, I love your new haircut. It looks so nice. We're not talking about those things, right? And if you don't like someone's haircut, you can just not acknowledge it. I'm not saying that you need to tell someone that either, because that's not necessarily the right thing to do. Let's get through this last one, and then we'll pick up the rest next week. Proverbs 7, verses 11 and 13. And this is the one Miss Lauren, do you want to read these two for us?
Sure. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. So she cockingly kissed him with an impudent face. She said to him.
Yes. I have...
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump ahead of you.
No, you're fine. I have brazen. The New American Standard says brazen. I think the New King James is the only one that used imputed. That's another one that I can't say that I've heard today. Does
Sassy.
Anyone?
Sassy. Smart aleck.
Sassy. Yeah. Yeah, one of my definitions here is cocky boldness. What are some other definitions we have for impudent?
Casual disrespect, improperly forward or bold.
Yes, another one I had is hard-faced.
Hard-faced?
Hard-faced.
Yeah, audacious.
I think, I don't necessarily think I've hard-faced is might be the best one, but I liked cocky boldness, you know, because you can picture that type of person, mm-hmm. right? And what about rebellious?
I'm resisting control or authority, discontented as toward authority. So they kind of resist whoever is the authority figure.
Yes. Yeah,
because they don't want to hear anything from them.
Given to or engaged in rebellion.
Okay. Another one I have is not easily handled or kept in place. And I feel like that one kind of follows the her feet do not remain at home with that definition. And we did impudent, not showing due respect for another person, cocky boldness. And I think that is...